This is Dave Adelson reporting for WCRS-FM in Columbus, Ohio. I'm in Tijuana at the albergue or refugee shelter Iglesia Embajadores de Jesús. And I'm speaking with Luis Gomez of Psicológicos Sin Fronteras, or Psychologists Without Frontiers, and wanted to share with you some of the great work they're doing. Luis, so how long have you been doing this, and what is the this that you've been doing?
Well, we have the movement Psychologists Without Frontiers have in Mexico. We have 2 years since the creation of the movement. The movement came from Spain originally. It's an international movement, and we have been doing work with migrant communities most of the time, because since we live here in Tijuana, the project that I brought from Mexico, it's part of an international movement, and we are already we already been in 14 states here inside Mexico. So most of the work that we have been doing here, it's in shelters since the caravanas migrantes. So part of what we do, it's incidencia social, I don't know how you say it in English. It's try to make a difference in society by means of psychology. So what we do is we take dynamics, group dynamics into the shelters so they can speak about their process of migration. And another thing that we do is art therapy. So we work in conjunction or together with artists. So you already knew Eddie Lizarra. And what we do is try to make them express the situations or the difficult situations that they have been coping with, so they can express it, and in some way it helps them to cope with the situation that they're living in. Because if you notice, in most of the shelters, there's difficult, the spaces are too close together and there's problems between them.
You were telling me about a project you've got going on today with some young women describing their personal histories of migration, and what are you doing that for, and what is the outcome of it that you've seen?
The project is we're working in alliance with another organization. It's an organization that tries to in some way change the politics for the better of the community, of the migrant community. And in order for them to do that, they need to have hard numbers, statistics and investigation in the field, so they can in some way show with evidence what's going on out there with the migrant community. So what we're doing is we're helping them share their story. They fill a questionnaire where they let you know the process where they went through since they went out from their country, Honduras, Nicaragua, Salvador, and they tell you the basics, like I went out from my country because of the violence, because I was threatened. Either way, they try to tell us their story so they can put it into numbers. So how many people went out because of the violence, how many people went out just for the poverty, the different aspects of the situations that push them to migrate. So what we're doing is to compile all the information by means of a questionnaire. So we send those to Mexico and they do the part of the investigation.
And apropos that point, what's your perception, given the amount of data that you've gathered so far? How much are people migrating for economic reasons versus the threat of violence?
It's a combination of several factors. Most of them poverty. They don't have the means to get by in their country. The other important part is the gangs. They go through a process where they have to pay them to live in their apartments or in their houses. So it's kind of harsh, to have to pay for a rent and on top of that have to pay to a gang for the right to live in your place. So it's a combination. Some of them, they just do it because they want a better opportunities in life, not necessarily because they went through violence or because they don't have the means to do it. They want better opportunities. They have a better way of living, so they migrate. And you know, most of them, majority of them, are going to the United States. And some of them, the ones that we have been interviewing, some of them are going to stay here in Tijuana, because seeing the situation right now, the political situation, that they are not letting them go through the process of asylum, they decide to stay here. So they're making their living here. We already interview people, families, complete families, that they already have apartments, their children are going to school, most of them are working, so están formando parte. They're blending with society here in Tijuana.
So as far as that goes, would you say that the Trump administration, by being inordinately harsh, has actually solved the problem they're trying to solve by denying the possibility of asylum and forcing the migrant populations to assimilate into the Mexican society instead?
You know, I wouldn't dare to express an opinion related to the political part. What I really can do is to my own experience, what I have been living with them, what they have told us, and some of them, they definitely feel forced to ask for their asylum here in Mexico, and because of the situation, because they're denying them, they're spending 6, 8, 9, even a year trying to wait for their number, their interview. And so they get tired and they decide to stay here in Mexico. So it's...
I was really curious about that point in particular, the effect of the waiting and the uncertainty about your future. You're in a transitional place, you packed in fairly tightly with a lot of other people who similarly are not in control of their own destinies. As somebody who's trying to draw out people's personal histories and how this is affecting them emotionally, what would you say is the effect of the just indefinite waiting that they're experiencing? And how has your work, you think, impacted that?
You know, one of the main factors or the main emotional responses that we have been identifying is anxiousness, depression, overall depression, uncertainty about what their future is. And what we're doing is we're trying to do group therapy with them or individual therapy in case it's necessary. But most of the work has been pointed to group therapy because, like I said before, I was talking to you about that. And some of the important parts of group therapy is that they share experiences of life and they feel that they're not alone in what they're doing. They listen to other stories and they get to the conclusion that, oh, I'm not the only one going through the same thing, and they keep going, so I have to keep going. So it's they reach to a conclusion that the community helps them to go through the situation, and part of that work is what we do. And we have been noticing a lot of changes, and especially when they feel that they belong to the place where they're living in, and they go through a mental process where they identify that the next step is to try to understand why they're here. And once they get to that point, either they decide to go through and keep going to ask for their asylum, or decide to jump the fence, or they decide to stay here in Mexico. So they get to a conclusion where they decide to do something in specific. Either they go back, they go through the wall, or they stay here in Mexico.
So that decision gives them a greater sense of agency?
Yes, In Spanish, we say pertenencia, so to belong. So because they sharing their story, and now they know they're being here. And they, once you know that someone is out there trying to help you, that's worrying about what you do and what you're living, what you're going through, they feel helped, and that lets you. How do you say it's lets you go more relaxed into what you're doing, something like I was trying to express something more specific, but I don't have the words in English.
Say it in Spanish and I'll translate it and then I'll record.
You translate. Okay, great.
So you were basically in English, you were saying that once they have a sense of belonging, I think you're talking about belonging.
Yes.
They have a sense of belonging and they've been through a lot and there are people taking advantage of them, but the recognition that there are some people who are actually interested in helping them, and it's a matter of distinguishing between threatening forces and helpful forces, and being able to have some trust and a sense of, like you said, a sense of belonging and community.
And being helped.
Yeah, and being helped, then it helps lift that sense of isolation and threat.
They feel empowered. They feel empowered to keep going and to try to make the best out of the situation. It's curious how they respond to the help. Even if it's just a help from not only a professional, but from anyone, because they know they're being helped. And that's an important part of in our lives. You know, in their heart, they know that not everyone out there is trying to make them their life worse. On the contrary, there's going to be someone that's going to help them. And that is what gave them that empowerment to keep going, the strength.
How has doing this changed you? Compared to 2 years ago, what is it that doing this has done to you, and what would you say is something you learned that you would not have understood without having gone through it yourself?
Definitely the part where not underestimate the effort that everyone it's putting out there to help them. Because some of the time we have been working with other professionals, psychologists and artists, and they feel sometimes in our talks together, they say, you know, I don't feel that we're helping because I don't see any change. Because what I tell them is, what I have been noticing is that it's not going to change just right away. It's a continuum. It's a process that they go through, and you see in time, 2-3 months later, you found them in another shelter, and what they say is, you know what, thank you for helping me, thank you for letting me share my story, because if it hasn't been for that, I don't know where I have been emotionally. I was crying, I felt hopelessness, I felt depressed, and I didn't know what to do, and when I spoke about it, I felt like I was letting go something of weight out of me. So it's beautiful to feel that. And what I have learned is that we need to keep going with our help, no matter what.
How can people, a North American audience, support what you're doing? If they want to find out about it, if they want to help out, where can they go and what can they do?
Well, one of the problems we have been having as psychologists is help from another professionals. So if there's someone out there, psychologist, a specialist in the field of social psychology or psychotherapy, we receive that help gladly most of the time. The other aspect, we don't use too much materials, but what we do use, it's the paintings, colors, the artist, the artistic part. But other than that, it's mostly human help is what we are looking for, because we work in 7 different shelters and we don't have the human capacity to cover them all. So we have to go there every 20, 25 days. So it would be better if we go every week. So,
how are you funded?
We are not. We pay for everything ourselves. The movement, it's a non-profit. We try not to get into that part because we have been noticing a lot of situations, per se, about when you're asking for funding or materials to work. So what we do is we buy ourselves the materials that we use, and when we have a little bit of a trouble, we do receive sometimes donations like pens, collars, painting, sheets for the children to paint. But yeah, it's every now and then. We don't.
How can people find you on the web?
Yeah, we are under psicologosinfronterasmx.org, or you can find us on Facebook under Psicólogos Sin Fronteras BC, BC, Psicólogos Sin Fronteras Baja California.
So, psicologosinfronterasmx.org, psicologos. S-I-N Fronteras, Fronteras, M-X, like Mexico, .org.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't have done better.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, guys, for all your help that you're bringing here to Mexico.